Coming up on Tech News Today, what we thought was the most impressive stuff from Google I.O., who's winning third place in smartphones, and why the USA Network is so much better than Twitter. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, May 16th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT5. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Hikaru Sulu.
Filling in for the vacationing Chekhov, which is Jason Howe. Actually, he's not vacationing. He's at I.O., but he'll be back tomorrow. Meanwhile, we're going to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting with the top 10 of the day in the news feeds. Google treated its developers to a 3.5-hour keynote yesterday to kick off its I.O. developer conference. Among the many announcements were a subscription music service called All Access, a Game Center-like feature called for the Google Play Store, a standalone Hangouts app, voice search for desktop, new map tweaks for desktop and mobile, and a stock version of the Samsung Galaxy S4 coming June 26th for $649. Larry Page finished the keynote with a speech and Q&A session.
After Google's demanded Microsoft remove its Windows Phone YouTube app because there wasn't any advertising, Microsoft has responded saying, wait, no, we're happy to. Google sent a cease and desist letter to Microsoft recently, to which Microsoft responded, we'd be more than happy to include advertising, but need Google to provide us access to the necessary APIs. In light of Larry Page's comments today, they're referring to I.O., calling for more interoperability and less negativity, we look forward to solving this matter together for our mutual customers.
Yeah, Google's making Microsoft sad.
Very sad.
Let's talk about a little company that nobody ever seems to talk about, Google. Google announced it's going to add some features to Gmail. First up, Google Wallet integration. You'll be able to send and receive money to others as an attachment to your email. The feature will first roll out in the U.S. and on the desktop version of Gmail. Also coming, quick action buttons that will let you do things like RSVP from your inbox. Flight confirmation emails will also be enhanced. You'll see flight information presented in a Google Now-like card above the actual email.
IDC added their Q1 report on the mobile phone market to the pile right alongside Gartner and Strategy Analytics. IDC shows Android rising to 75% market share with a 79.5% rise in shipments. iOS shipments rose 6.6%, but market share declined to 17.3%. Windows Phone nudged past BlackBerry in IDC's rankings for third place with 3.2% of the market on a 133.3% rise in shipments.
Back to Google. Google and NASA are forming a laboratory to study artificial intelligence using computers that focus on quantum physics. The quantum computer, which performs complex calculations thousands of times faster than existing supercomputers, is expected to be active in the third quarter of this year. It's called the Quantum Artificial Intelligence Lab. It'll focus on machine learning, which is the way that computers take notes of patterns of information to improve their outputs.
Let's not talk about Google. EA says it's discontinued its Online Pass program. Online Pass locked features of games like Madden and Battlefield 3 to one console. To unlock those same features on other consoles require a code purchased from EA. EA says it entered the program partially because players didn't like it and says none of EA's new titles will have Online Pass.
Hey, did you guys hear what Google announced?
No.
Google made some cloudy announcements that target Amazon. Google added PHP support to its App Engine and opened up its EC2 competitor Compute Engine to every developer that wants to use it. Google also announced Google Cloud Storage, which competes with Amazon's S3 storage solution.
Ah, screw Google. Google partner Recon Instruments plans to unveil a pair of sunglasses that comes with its own heads-up display, although the specs have nothing to do with Google Glass. Recon is launching something called Jet. So it's a heads-up display glasses, has a tiny monitor that sits near the bottom of the field of vision on the right eye rather than the top. The unit also includes a dual-core processor, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity, GPS and movement sensors, and a high-definition camera with other data that a user can upload to the web.
The New Zealand Supreme Court granted an appeal to Kim.com over whether the Mega Upload founder can examine evidence being withheld by U.S. authorities. Dot-com's legal team had previously won the right to see the evidence, but most recently, New Zealand's Court of Appeal overturned those rulings, concluding the U.S. could move forward with a summary case.
Let's talk about Yahoo. Nah, I'm just screwing with you. Google introduced a revamped messaging system yesterday under the brand Hangouts. Google went on and on about how your chats and video services will be in a single, beautiful interface. People said, sure, that's great, but what about SMS? On a Google Plus post, Google Community Manager for Hangouts and Chat, Dori Storbeck says that SMS integration is coming soon, and it is already one of the most requested features for Hangouts.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. When we built the studio there at Twit Petaluma, we chose to do as much as we could through the cloud, store documents, hold meetings, and we did not want a big old PBX system in the basement. So when Russell, our IT guy, said, why don't you do a cloud-based phone system? No brainer. That's exactly what we did. We love Ring Central. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and Ring Central allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. Our producers love getting their voicemail in their email. If somebody insists on sending you a fax, you can get it right there on your smartphone. And now they have a new feature. It's the Ring Central app for Salesforce.com. You can integrate all your phone calls with your CRM system seamlessly, create new records for contacts and leads, create real-time call notes. And while you're on the call, you can do that. You can make those notes while you're talking. Really makes your CRM more productive, and it's easy to use. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. You can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. So call this number, designated for our listeners. Get that trial, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss what has been a week full of mobile news is Sasha Segan, lead analyst at mobile at PCMag.com. Welcome back to the show, Sasha. Great to have you, man.
Hi, great to be here.
I know that we'll talk about it a little at the end of the show too, but you guys are heating up your big roundup of access for carriers.
Yeah, I'm actually warming my hands right now over a very toasty PC that is crunching the numbers for this gigantic network test we're doing. We've got these three cars on the road. They've driven 10,000 miles already. They're testing all the major wireless networks for this huge feature of speed test that we have coming out in June.
I love that speed test. It's one of my favorite things you guys do all year. I'm looking forward to that. Let's start off talking about Google I.O., though. As you may know, we covered it right after Tech News Today yesterday, all 3.5 hours of it to the bitter end. Lots of stuff announced. Android Studio IDE for building apps. If you're a developer, it looked really impressive for app builders. I know Gina was really excited about it. Aaron was really excited about it. Google Play Music All Access, Google Play Game Services, new photo stuff, 15 gigabytes of storage for backups, highlights enhanced, the thing called Auto Awesome that makes animated GIFs out of your photos automatically, some tweaks to the desktop so you can say, okay, Google, and immediately get voice search on your desktop. A lot of tweaks to Google Maps where the interface allows you to interact directly. You don't have to drag things. You don't have to use menus as much. And, of course, we'll talk about that Samsung GS4 with IaaS in just a minute. So excluding the stock Android Samsung, what was the thing that caught your eye the most yesterday, Sasha?
Well, what really caught my eye was not the individual announcements, but the theme. For the past year or two, Google has really been scattershot. Are they a web services company? Are they a hardware company? Are they a R&D, basic research, self-driving cars company? What is Google? What is it doing? Like, they had so many ideas that they were almost in danger of going in the Yahoo direction of, we have no idea what this company does. This company does everything, or maybe it does nothing. And so I was really actually heartened to see this I.O. was about, hey, we're a web services company, and we deliver information and services through the cloud. We do it better than anyone else. We're advancing all of those projects, and we are talking to our developers. And so shuffling off all these weird little hardware and pie-in-the-sky projects like the Nexus Q and Google Glass and the self-driving cars, and instead saying, hey, we still make all of our money on the web, and here's what we're doing with that stuff. That's what really heartened me about that extremely long keynote.
We noticed that too. We kept remarking over and over during our live coverage that you're really seeing the evidence of Larry Page's emphasis on focus. So the products aren't new, but they are getting better because they're adding things, making them better, perfecting them. As you noticed that as well.
Well, yeah, the other thing is with Larry Page's statements at the end, he explained basically why Google seems to be getting into everything. It's like when we wanted to get into mapping, what happened was, well, we needed to have cars that could do that. And that's why we had the whole self-driving car project. It actually made some sense out of all the crazy things that Google does at once. These are like side effects of what they're trying to do, which is deliver information. They might have glass for your face, but the real thing is getting this information to you as quickly as possible. And that revamped search looks very different. The 10 blue links are so far down now with that knowledge graph expanding and expanding. It's really quite impressive what Google's doing with information delivery.
Yeah, it was interesting. Larry Page gave that rather inspirational speech at the end, and then he went into the Q&A, which is I wish he hadn't taken the extra time, but it was cool that he was willing to just do that, like unmoderated Q&A to the developers. I thought it was interesting what he said about fiber, when he's like, the reason we're doing Google Fiber is because the connectivity isn't fast enough for us out there. We have all these data centers, and the internet doesn't work fast enough between them. And that seems to be what Google says, is we want to do things, and the world gets in our way, and so we're trying to change the world. Sarah, do you think he was a little too lofty in some of these sentiments?
You know, it was interesting watching my Twitter stream kind of react to some of the stuff that Larry Page was saying. And some of them were like, wow, you know, look at Larry Page. He's being so forthcoming, and he's being really honest, and this is awesome. And other people were saying, where is this mythical country that Google would like to operate its business in? Because it's certainly not the U.S. I mean, it's sort of like Google says we are constrained by so many things and we just want to experiment in the way that we want to experiment. Somebody suggested Black Rock City, which is where they have Burning Man, would be a great place for Google to do more experiments. But I think in general, it's really, really fascinating to listen to a CEO be so open about the fact that we have constraints like insurance policies that keep people from sharing things like their medical history, which can actually be very helpful for the advancement of science. You know, this is very high level stuff, but it was fascinating, even though I was mumbling and grumbling about it being a 3.5 hour keynote, to listen to the stuff that he was willing to share.
Well, not to contradict myself, but one of the things that makes Google Google and one of the things that makes Google great is their ability to dream and to be constantly looking at the big picture and this sort of attitude of futurism in the C-suites of the company. What I liked about yesterday was that they were able to take the attitude of futurism and kind of shuffle it off to the end and still have a focused keynote about today's products that make money. So, as you said, focus. But they're not getting rid of this dreamer mentality that helps make them great.
Well, it's like the 20% time rule writ large, right? They have Sergey and the X Lab working on that crazy visionary stuff. And the rest of the company is actually focused on making the products that they have already established work better. I think that may be one of the reasons you saw the Google stock take a rise yesterday, is people really believe that vision, at least in the investment community. Let's talk a little about one of the things that people were really excited about, but also a little shocked by the price of, is that Samsung Galaxy S4, Ayaz.
Yeah, so there was not a lot of hardware announcements. Well, None, other than this. There was the one mention of the, in the 3.5 hours, is this new Samsung Galaxy S4, which obviously is not a new phone. It's going to cost $650, coming from Google directly, available June 26th. It's going to run on T-Mobile and AT&T's LTE networks, 16 gigabytes of storage. But the big hook about the device is that there's no TouchWiz on this. This is a stock Android experience. The device is completely unlocked with an unlocked bootloader, and I believe it's going to receive the updates as quickly as a Nexus device would, even though that there's no Nexus designation on this S4. Sasha, what do you make of this move by Google and Samsung?
Well, Samsung is by far the biggest maker of Android phones, and they have all the profit in Android phones right now. And I think this is just Samsung and Google playing nice, Samsung wanting to have a chunk of that developer community, Google wanting to make it clear that they're paying attention to that developer community. It's a nice thing. There should be more of these. I mean, we have the HTC One Developer Edition, which is bootloader unlocked, but they aren't willing to do one with stock Android. It would be nice if more manufacturers offered these sort of fringe developer stock Android options on their hardware. It is a fringe product. Okay, it's for the people in that room. It's for that relatively small, in terms of the 7 billion people on this planet, cult of stock Android enthusiasts. And they're going to love it. But I have to say, the thing which most drove me nuts yesterday and this morning is the sheer level of whining about the price. Okay? Oh, my God, the whining.
Now, with $650, I believe there was in the live blogs, they explained that there was an audible gasp. People were horrified at $650 for the price.
What do they expect? I mean, I'd like to know, you know, the gaspers, what did they want to hear?
$650 is what an unlocked Galaxy S4 costs. If you go to any country in the world, if you go to Italy, if you go to France, if you go to Belgium, if you go to Hong Kong, actually, sometimes it costs $750. Sometimes it costs $800. $650 is what one of these cutting-edge unlocked cell phones costs. And it just shows that the Americans in the room are so spoiled and ruined by our subsidy regime that they don't understand how much these products cost.
Tom, should we throw the blame to Google because they have that Nexus 4 and it's so dang cheap compared to something like the S4 unlocked?
Well, yeah. I mean, it certainly didn't help, right, that they obfuscated the real price. And maybe that's why the developers were so gaspy. But I've been buying unlocked phones for years. $649 seemed exactly reasonable to me when they put it up there. So I was shocked at the people being shocked, personally. I mean, that's what an unlocked phone costs.
Yeah, and the thing is, it doesn't have to. Like, that's what an unlocked, super-duper, absolutely everything is state-of-the-art, these components just came out last month phone costs. But if you want an unlocked phone, if you want a decent mid-range unlocked phone that is not going to, you know, thrill the super-hyper enthusiast, there's a lot of stuff out there in the $200 to $300 range. There's some good Sony Ericssons. There's the HTC One V. There's, heck, I mean, for brand new phones, Nokia just released the 521 on T-Mobile. That's $150 with no subsidy. So, yeah, this, you know, the absolute cutting-edge state-of-the-art is $650, but you don't have to pay that to get an unlocked or unsubsidized phone.
There's another story.
No, I thought your comment in your article on PC Mag was very good, that comparing these types of smartphones to getting, like, high-end gaming PCs versus just getting a suitable desktop that'll do what you need.
Right. I have a $7,000 PC under my desk right now, and it's a $7,000 PC. It performs incredibly. It performs like the Samsung Galaxy S4 of PCs. But the thing is, in this world right now, not that many people have the use or the applications for the power in a $7,000 PC, but a lot of people want the absolute hottest gaming PC of smartphones.
And by the way, if anyone wanted to see the HTC One with stock Android, HTC put out a statement saying they're not going to do it. It's true. They actually.
I thought you were going to surprise me and be like, an HTC just put out.
No. They put out an announcement saying they're not going to do it. So if you want the other hottest phone that could possibly do this, no.
We will never give
Poor
you
HTC.
What you want.
They could have really knocked it out.
Let's cheer things up with Pebble getting some money, making it rain.
Ayaz, are you wearing your Pebble watch?
No.
Oh.
I'm not.
You have a Pebble watch though, right?
No, I don't. That's why I'm not wearing one.
Well, my goodness. I guess I got you and Leo mixed up again.
Yes,
Leo,
well, it happens
Leo,
often.
Leo has a Pebble watch.
It's my hair.
Kind of from the beginning, I said, so what do you think? And he goes, eh, It's a watch. You can change the face. I don't know. I still need my smartphone. Pebble has announced some software enhancements for the Pebble. They got a bunch of money, about $15 million Series A round, led by a venture firm called Charles River Ventures. And Pebble says, okay, we're still working on giving all the 85,000 people who ordered Pebble watches off of our Kickstarter page their watches, but we've definitely shipped most of those. 70,000 of those have reached the early supporters. They say tens of thousands of additional orders have been placed since that initial one. But the cool thing is that the SDK, which is called Pebble Kit, has gotten a refresh. So it enables third-party apps to send and receive data from the smartwatch, displaying things like weather, sports scores. The watch can act as a remote control for your phone itself. There's also the Pebble Sports API, which will allow devs to build GPS-enabled smartwatch apps, kind of like a Runkeeper app, if anybody's familiar with that, that helps you track, you know, your mileage and your speed and that sort of thing. I feel like for the Pebble Watch owners, and I know a few of them, most of the time people say, this is really cool. You know, this is, it's kind of the first wearable watch, right? This is where everybody's going. This is that device that all the companies are rumored to be working on. As you don't have a Pebble Watch, I didn't really want one because I felt like I didn't do enough because I still sort of need my smartphone and so it doesn't replace anything for me. Does this SDK, do some of these enhancements make it more attractive to you?
It definitely does make it more attractive. I've been into the smartwatch concepts for a long time. I do talk about it a lot, and I waffled back and forth about funding this project, whether I wanted it or not.
I guess that's
probably
what I
why. Yeah. Because I was thinking about it, but I just didn't pull the trigger because I didn't know if this company was going to make this device. The fact that there's an SDK that allows it to be more powerful, It's always great to get more information anywhere else I can get it. I love the idea of Microsoft Spot Watches, and I always get mocked about that, but I love Spot Watches. I used to have the Nano Watch for a while until the wristband broke. A bunch of these little things. I like having computing devices on me. The more information that is available to me, if the SDK can do this with the Pebble, and you can work with your Android phones or your iOS devices, I think that's going to be great for this watch. I think that e-ink display, though, does hold it back a little bit. While it does give you great battery life, it's not going to be able to give you data as quickly as something as an LCD, or at least won't be able to show you data in as a graphic way, because it is that black and white e-ink.
That was part of the reason I sort of went like, huh, a remote for your phone. How would that work? Sasha, does that sound intriguing to you?
Well, there have been a bunch of attempts by phone makers, especially Sony Ericsson, at creating these remote for your phone watches. And it's funny because we've been watching these smartwatches come and go for I've been watching them since at least 2004. I don't know if you remember the Fossil Palm OS watch. Oh,
yeah. I have one at home.
Oh, yeah. I gave that a glowing review. I gave that a review where I must have been on something at the time. But
you like that mini stylus, did you?
Yeah, I just like the idea that it was a wearable that could actually do something. It was a wearable that had a full operating system and full capabilities. And we're still really early in this process, okay? We're really early, and the wearables and the phones are going to evolve together. And I still believe in this vision that Motorola had ages ago, where you kind of have a CPU in your pocket, and it expresses itself in certain ways. And, like, it could express itself through information on your wrist, or it could express itself through information on a handheld screen or a tablet-sized screen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if you start looking at the watch less as, oh, this is a standalone device, and more as this is another way for the sensors and internet connection on you to express information, then the entire concept really expands.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Shutterstock. .com. You'll find the perfect image or video for your next creative project. Or you put together a website or a flyer, some kind of video. You probably need some stock footage. You can't afford to go get all this stuff yourself. And the best part about Shutterstock is they have professional photographers and artists contributing. And every image is individually evaluated by Shutterstock reviewers for content and quality before adding it to its library. But that doesn't mean they don't have a lot of stuff. They're adding 10,000 images every day. They have over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. You can choose individual image packs if that's what you need, or if you're always using a bunch, monthly subscription, whatever the best deal is for you. You can download 25 images a day with a standard subscription, and you can download any image, any size. You pay only one price. Sophisticated search tools is what always blows me away. You can search and drill down by subject, asset type, by gender, by emotion. You pretty much throw almost anything at it. And the new Spectrum tool, you can sort images by color. Many creative teams use it to get inspiration and ideas. It's free to browse. It's even free to use the Lightbox. You can save images to a gallery, access them anytime, share them with other team members. And, of course, there's an award-winning iPad app if you're on the go and you want to use it on your tablet. Shutterstock is a complete global offering, but you don't have to take my word for it. Try it for free today. Sign up for a free account. You don't have to use a credit card. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save your favorite images to a Lightbox to review later. And then once you decide to purchase, use offer code TNT5 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 30% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT5. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we heard about IDC's numbers in the news fuse earlier. And of course, earlier this week, Strategy Analytics had their revenue estimates for the mobile phone market. Gartner had their sales estimates. IDC does shipments. So here's how it breaks down. Android's dominating shipments, 75% according to IDC. And they're dominating sales according to Gartner, 74.4% of the market. But Apple's the most profitable. 57% of the profits go to iOS according to Strategy Analytics. Samsung is your top smartphone maker, 27.6% of the market, according to Gartner, and the most profitable Android smartphone maker, 40.8% of the market, according to Strategy Analytics. So it's down to the battle for third place, because that's not new. We knew Android on top, iOS right behind them. Windows Phone 8, as you heard, rose to third place in shipped. That's 3.2% versus BlackBerry's 2.9%, according to IDC. BlackBerry still is third in sales on Gartner's rankings, 3% of the market versus Windows Phone's 2.9%. So earlier this week, we saw a new Lumia from Nokia. We saw BlackBerry announce BlackBerry Messenger coming to iOS and Android, as well as showing us a few phones. Sasha, as we see the landscape for third place right now, who do you think has the edge? Where are we headed in this?
Oh, this is just harsh for everyone who isn't Apple and Android, isn't it? And I've thought for a while that Windows Phone is a really good operating system and that Windows Phone has unique things to say and it's very easy to use and a lot of the hardware is very interesting. And I got this 8X right here that is actually my phone right now. And it just hasn't been taking off and it just hasn't been grabbing people. I mean, that said, I still think in the larger scale of things, Windows Phone has more potential than BlackBerry does right now.
Is that because of the operating system? Is it because of the momentum? Or is it because BlackBerry is still trying to pick a direction?
It's all these things. It's because Windows Phone has multiple OEMs that are interested in it and that are promoting it, that Microsoft is still a big, rich, profitable, powerful company, and Microsoft really wants this to work, and Microsoft has very deep pockets. Microsoft has this has an end-to-end ecosystem, and they have the Xbox component, and they have the Windows on the desktop component, and they have the server components. So they have all these pieces that Windows Phone can fit together really well with. And BlackBerry, they're not drifting anymore, but I just fear that they drifted so far that they can't regain the momentum.
Sarah, what do you think? It does look like Microsoft's got all the mo right now, even though BlackBerry had their big BlackBerry Live celebration.
That's true. But yeah, I agree with Sasha that BlackBerry is maybe not in like a it's not in a full slide. But there isn't momentum. It's fine. BlackBerry has made some really good changes and choices as of late, but it was after a very long period of us going, what is happening over there? Wow, this company is done for. So when I look at the Windows Phone numbers versus BlackBerry, yes, Windows Phone has the edge. But I mean, we're talking like third in shipping numbers, not sales, and it's a distant third. So yes, Microsoft really cares about this, wants it to succeed. There are some great phones out there. I know that, you know, the few people I know who have Windows phones do love them. But they have a long way to go to catch up with a company like Samsung.
Yeah, a little bit of the analog here between Windows Phone and BlackBerry and Android and iOS, right? Because BlackBerry makes their own phones, so they're limited in the number you can choose from, whereas Windows Phone allows other makers to make phones. Ayaz, do you agree with everybody? Windows Phone has got the edge right now?
No, not necessarily. I just think it's a little older than BlackBerry 10. BlackBerry 10 is pretty new, and when that was announced a while ago, it basically killed sales of BlackBerry because who wanted the 7? BlackBerry 7, when you couldn't have an upgrade path, the phones wouldn't be of any use. So they probably had an Osborne effect by announcing all this stuff. And the other thing is a lot of people are just using their phones as their primary computers. Microsoft's got this big ecosystem where everything looks the same, but if you're not using their laptops or their tablets or their Xbox, you're not using any of this stuff. And if you're only looking at the phone, I think BlackBerry's still got a chance because in the phone market, they still have a name brand. As far as it comes to Windows Phone, people aren't looking at them as, oh, that's an HTC and that's the Samsung. They're like, that's the Windows Phone. That's Android and that's not. That's the way people are looking at this, I think. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily by branding.
You know, somebody in chat pointed out, hey, Sarah said, you know, Microsoft has a long way to catch up to Samsung. And they said, Samsung makes Windows Phone. But I think most people equate Samsung with very successful Android devices. Mm-hmm. So,
Samsung barely makes Windows phones. Yeah. But let me throw you another data point here. Every year, we at PC Mag do this huge research project, this big, you know, 5 digits worth of people user survey, where we talk to people about the devices they own and what they think of them. And this year, Windows Phone won the Reader's Choice for operating system. Over iOS, over Android. People who have these devices seem to really love them. It's just they aren't even on people's radars. Like, people don't come into stores wanting them. If you force someone to use a Windows phone, it looks like they absolutely love them. But you practically have to twist their arms to get them to use it.
And that's a marketing and carrier relations problem for Microsoft that they're definitely working on and trying to solve and getting better at. But you're right. It's not necessarily intrinsic to which is the better, quote unquote, operating system. All right, let's move on. Twitter is great, Sarah, but it's a little small and it's not really welcoming. Does the USA Television Network have a solution for me?
Yes, and it's their own social network that they've built on the web so that you can hang out with other people who enjoy USA programming. Doesn't that sound fun?
That sounds like exactly what I was after.
Yeah, well, Jesse Redness, who's the senior vice president over at Digital at USA Network, says it's not that they don't like Twitter, but he says not all social conversations about TV are happening on Twitter. You know, everybody thinks Twitter's the place to be. He says, we think Twitter's a big component of the conversation around TV, but we also know real-time conversation about TV is happening on our own platforms, specifically USA's Character Chatter platform that Redness says about 30,000 people do sometimes get on the platform to chat about their content, to comment on a show when it's on the air. There's a new USA website using Character Chatter that will, what they say, curate the conversation on the web about USA shows. He says our approach is really to use Twitter to help funnel people into a much larger, more welcoming community and one that we can monetize. So that's really the key here. I mean, USA is basically saying, okay, well, we know BBC America and the Weather Channel and ESPN have actually gotten into ad deals with Twitter, but we don't really feel like that's the way to go. What we want to do is say, hey, follow us on Twitter. We will point you over to our Character Chatter platform where we control the advertising. We have our own deals. We're going to make more money. And that's where we feel like it makes sense because you cut out all that other Twitter noise. Now, Glenn Brown, who's Twitter's director of promoted content and sponsorship, says the fact that we have 90% of the public conversation around television supports the fact that we are the de facto second screen. While what our partners do is completely up to them. So Twitter's sort of like, whatever, USA, do what you want. I mean, people are still going to talk about the shows that they're watching on USA on Twitter. Sasha, who do you think is right here?
We need a million little TV channel controlled social networks like I Need a Hole in My Head. I mean, come on. Okay. I can guarantee you that whatever Character Chatter is, it is not as fast and well designed as Twitter. But also, this is just freaked out content providers desperately trying to grab at users because they don't control social media platforms. And I don't really know if there's anything to see here. I mean, 30,000 people what infinitesimal tiny percentage of the number of people talking on Twitter about television is that?
Yeah, I know. It's
well, the USA Network has 109,000 followers on its Twitter account. So it's a third of USA's own Twitter account followers.
Right. But if I watch a USA Network TV show, I'm not necessarily following USA Network. I'm probably talking about it with my friends or through a hashtag or with some affinity group. You know, USA is frustrated because they're being cut out of this conversation around their content. They're trying to regain control of that conversation, but that's not necessarily what users want. It's just what USA Network wants to make money. They're not really offering users anything of value here other than that USA Network gets to make more money.
But every time an old media institution has tried to force people into doing things the way they want to, it always works, right?
Yeah. Tom, what do you think? I mean, do you think 30,000 people who really want to be there will benefit more from, you know, highly targeted ads? Because if you're hanging out on the USA Network's social channel, you probably really want to talk to other people who are watching whatever USA show you're watching.
Yeah, I'm curious whether that's a simultaneous user count or a total user count. But as Sasha pointed out, 109,000 people following USA on Twitter are people who really want to follow the USA Network. There are plenty of other people watching the USA Network who aren't actually following the USA Network Twitter account. So this is a real tiny slice of things. This is, you know what, USA, owned by NBC Universal, now a Comcast company. This strikes me as a very Comcast-like attitude of, we would really like everyone to exist within our walls, and we want to monetize everyone within our walls. We don't want to cooperate with the rest of the internet. It's permeating now into the broadcast arm, seems like.
It just seems flat out idiotic. There's no way to sugarcoat this. There's no point to do this. If you're going to be a big company like Comcast, either buy a piece of Twitter or talk to them to figure out how to monetize while you're on Twitter. They have the infrastructure. Twitter's been doing this for a very long time. And to have these silly things that Comcast has been doing, they invested in that second screen app. I'm blanking on the name. It was ZBox or something like that. They've invested in these things where they can try to control every single part of what's going on. And the fact that they can't is driving them nuts. But this is just a really bizarre thing to do. They should be worried about programming, not necessarily the conversations. The conversations will be there. They don't need to be providing the backbone.
And I still don't think second screen is the way you get people to engage with you online, trying to force some kind of second screen. I know that broadcasters really want that to happen. What people want, they want to be able to watch their shows online. And now we've got ABC earlier this week announcing they're going to allow live streaming with authentication. TBS and TNT apparently getting in on the act too, IS.
That's right. Time Warner announced that TBS and TNT, not this show, but the channel, will start streaming online 24 hours a day starting this summer. The actual launch date is still coming. They're going to tell that when that happens in another announcement. Of course, this is going to require authentication. You've got to log in with your cable or satellite info. And the TNT and TBS live streams will be available on the web, and also available on an iPhone and iPad apps with other platforms to be supported by the end of the year. Steve Coonan, a Turner executive, said, "Tablets and smartphones become television sets, bringing new opportunities for us and for advertisers." Tom, this sounds really forward-thinking for any cable channel or any network. We had ABC offering live streaming in a limited capacity. Now TNT and TBS. Do you think this is a trend, or is this just a couple of people who are crazy?
It's a reaction to Aereo, honestly, and TNT and TBS are cable channels, so it's not as direct a reaction, but they're realizing that, okay, once again, we're being pushed from behind to make this available. I mean, it's still authentication, right? You still have to be a cable subscriber, so they're not taking a big risk here. They're basically getting the cable. They've taken this long to get all of the different cable channels on board with doing this. And the wheels of bureaucracy in the industry move slow. So this doesn't surprise me at all that it's happening. Interesting to see TNT and TBS be the next ones to make it happen.
Sasha, TNT and TBS have a lot of live sports on them as well as original programming. Do you think that this is an aggressive move? Because it seems like when it comes to sports deals, there's usually a lot of hoops you got to jump through. No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom's right. I think I think the only surprise here is how long this has taken to happen. I mean, there's no real business model shift here. The authentication protects their cable MSO revenue. There's not, you know, they're not unbundling. This isn't something where you can subscribe to their channel as a cord cutter there. There is no business model change here. There is just how long it takes to sign these painful redistribution and multiple screen deals on all of this content. And it just shows how hidebound the TV industry is by these many, many layers of overlapping lawyers and content agreements, that to do something this obvious and this really conservative, because this is conservative because of that cable authentication, it's just disappointing that it took so long.
Sarah, you're a cord cutter. As Sasha mentioned, this does absolutely nothing for you. Do you
Correct.
Think this gives you any hope that one day in maybe 20 years, they'll go, okay, we'll could be online first, and then you can buy that box later?
I don't think really any of this points to more a la carte options for somebody like me. I think what it does is say, oh, okay, if you're a cable subscriber, and like you said, you want to watch a certain sports game, right? And you're on your iPad, and maybe you're not at home or whatever. It'll just sort of ingrain in your mind more like, oh, TBS and TNT and ABC, those are the channels that I can get kind of anywhere. So those are the channels that maybe over time I'll become more loyal to. I'll watch more programming because it's those channels that I have away from my main living room setup where all of the other channels aren't really caught up yet. It's almost like, you know, being one of the first 10 really popular apps on a new mobile platform. It's like sometimes, you know, years later, people still really like that app because you were there first.
And that's the other thing. Like, you're just looking for content. You're around the house. You have your iPad. You can watch more TV without having to have a special app, special hardware, any of that stuff. You have this going on. Time Warner owns a bunch of different networks. I'm just kind of curious why it's limited to these two right now and what other networks will have this in the future. Because there's really no big difference between having an app for a channel and then actually having a channel. I don't have to search. I guess I could search through an iPad to find the TBS app or the ABC app. But eventually this is going to happen just like where it's like cable, where you have a million apps for a million channels and you don't know where to look for any of the content.
Well, that's where TV Anywhere comes to your rescue, right? And the cable companies stop having to give you boxes. You know what you could do as more of this happens is just buy the cheapest plan, self-install, don't actually do anything with any hardware, and then just watch stuff online because the cable companies are becoming essentially middlemen for a pass, for buying like an access pass.
This is the way you're actually going to get live TV on your Apple TV, I guess. You could AirPlay
Possibly.
It over.
Yeah,
might be the easiest way to get that because they're still not allowing apps on Apple TV.
Let us move on to the randomizer then, while we wait for them to figure out television. While they wait to figure out television, we can move on to Smell-O-Vision. ChatPerf is a Japanese company selling a smartphone add-on, plugs in right now to iPhone, but they have an Android version they say will be available in the fall, and allows you to send smells to people. Screen comes up with a puff button. The user taps to release a scent, or someone can send them a message that will then release the scent. It does seem to be that each one of these things you add on is only got one smell in it, though.
That's so dumb. I mean,
you know.
Well, this is going to be the next
just
killer
the one, huh?
Next killer feature in the Galaxy S5, excuse me, when they add in these smell cartridges, because they've added in everything else in Samsung. That company's going to get bought. It's going to be integrated into the Galaxy.
But it's like, okay, am I understanding this right? So you plug in this sort of like single scent add-on. Then somebody sends you some sort of message that mm-hmm. pushes out that scent. Although you already kind of have the power to smell it because it's attached to your phone physically in your hand.
You're being forced to deal with smelling something right on demand of somebody else. Yeah.
But with a little apparatus that
or you could press
you
the
have
puff
on your side.
Yourself.
It's not as if the smell is going through the phone.
Yeah. Do you remember DigiSense? DigiSense was hooked up to the web and was supposed to allow websites to be able to deliver smells to you.
I don't.
No.
I mean,
no one remembers that.
These things never last.
Nobody wants to do this.
No.
So what you're saying is we could replace this with a scratch and sniff case.
I mean, a smell. When you smell something as you walk down the street, sometimes you go like, oh my gosh, I mean, catapulted back to second year of college. Like, smell can be very powerful.
Geofenced
but it's like,
ads. That's
you already
perfect.
Know what you're getting. The surprise element is.
You buy the little coffee sniff packet thing attached to your phone. As you walk past or near Starbucks, it starts emitting the smell and then you go in. It's targeted ads. That's what's going to happen.
Or they just need big fans, keep their windows open.
That too.
You don't need an app for that.
Is there any hope for digital scents, Sasha?
I live in New York City. Most of the smells here are smells I'd like to avoid. I was sniffing my phone while you were talking about this. It smells slightly like French fries. I'm not quite sure why. But yeah, of course. This is completely ridiculous. I completely do not see what is going on here.
Wait, does your Windows phone run on biodiesel? Is that why it smells like French fries?
Yeah, I've got a fuel cell that plugs into the bottom. It's the next great technology. Wouldn't that be awesome if you could just, like, you know, like take a French fry from your lunch and feed it into something and then it would recharge your phone?
That's better than this stupid add-on from the company that I'm not going to say because I can't remember. Let's move on to the calendar.
Bitcoin 2013. Yes, Bitcoin has its own conference. It's called the Future of Payments. It's running tomorrow, the 17th through the 19th, Saturday, in San Jose. The Winklevoss twins are the keynote speakers. Just throwing that out there. Also, the Microsoft Surface Pro is going to go on sale in the UK on May 23rd. And the Asus Transformer Book Hybrid PC will get a release date on May 21st.
Excellent. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got an email from Yakov who says he's a bit behind. I was listening to the May 2nd podcast where you talked about EA not bringing the next Madden to the Wii U and had to chime in. I've been a long-time Madden fan for close to 20 years. I've bought the game starting from PC versions onto the Xbox, the Wii, and most recently the PlayStation 3. The last version was an absolute turd, pardon my French. It was a slap in the face to all longtime Madden fans, so I will not buy the next version. And with how EA has treated their customers of late, they can go suck it. I will spend my money elsewhere. The future of Wii U is debatable, but neither Madden nor EA will decide it. Yakov, very upset with Madden.
My goodness.
I don't think that's French. I think there's a different
word. Patrick.
French. All right. Well, thank you, Yakov, and thank you, Sasha Segan, for joining us. Always great to have you along for the ride. Of course, you can find Sasha's work at PCMag.com. When are we going to get the carrier ratings Lollapalooza?
So the cars are on the road until the middle of next week, and then we have a couple of weeks to do data analysis, writing, production. You know, it's something like a 39 or 40 page story, so this thing is huge. You'll be seeing it in mid-June. It'll be great. If you want to see what it looked like last year, you can go on PCMag.com, look for Fastest Mobile Networks 2012. 2013 is all new, all different. As I said, the middle of June, and once it comes out, I would love to come in and talk about it, because we've got so much data that I can't even fit into the story. We learn all sorts of things about these networks. It's really fascinating.
Oh, that would be great. Let's plan on that. Jason Howell will be in touch. We'll figure out timing to talk about that, because I always love that story when it comes out every year.
Okay, great.
We will do it. PCMag.com for Sasha Segan. TechNewsToday.reddit.com for you, if you would like to have an effect on what stories we cover. We look at that every day. We'll find out what stories people have been voting on. For instance, the story about Kim.com and NewsFuse was getting votes on subreddit. Ended up in the NewsFuse. Go there, submit stories, vote on the other stories. Let us know what stuff you'd like us to talk about. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us TNT@twit.tv or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail 260-TNT-SHOW. Shannon Morse joins us tomorrow along with artist Len Peralta drawing our discussion stories like we did a week ago or so with Justin Robert Young. It was really fun. We'll have him back. See you then.